Listening to this last panel, but listening to all the voices today and last evening, an image started to come in my mind. And this image, of course, expressed in the very beautiful words of a Palestinian poet. And I say this, if Sylvia and Irella are in the room, I'm going to offer this poem for them. It's translated from Arabic, and it goes, like, share with me an attention to the drunkenness of light. The light of the butterfly in the blackness of this tunnel. I heard you, Leslie, but I say the poem. And listening deeply and thanking Jen for bringing this gathering of women together, we must continue to walk towards the sun, claiming the sky. You know, when you come from my part of the world, it's easy to say that I must have been a storyteller in my last life. And I'm thinking of one, and I think particularly of Jeanette, who touched me deeply in her presentation, of the little story that was told Rabindranath Tagore, and you know him surely, and his work, on the riches of the poor. This is a story of women. It's a story about the gift imaginary. This was a time of darkness. It was a time of, I learned something today from you. But this was a time of famine that was devastating the land of Shravasti. And the Lord Buddha, where all the people had gathered, the hungry people, the poor people, he looked at everybody and he said, who will feed these people? Who will care for these people? Who will take this task of feeding the hungry? He looked at the banker, Ratnakar, and he said to Ratnakar, what is your answer? Ratnakar, the banker, looked down and he said, but much more than all of my future is needed to feed those who are hungry. He then looked at Jaisen, who was the chief of the army, the king's chief. And Jaisen, of course, said, I would happily give you my life, but there is not enough food in my house. Dharampal, who possessed large pastures, sighed because he said, the god of the wind had dried out our fields, and I do not even know how to pay the king's taxes. Then somewhere in the gathering was Supriya. She was the beggar's daughter. And she raised her hand and she got up and she said, I will nourish these people. I will care for the people. Everybody was surprised and in consternation asked her, but how will you do this? How can you accomplish this wish of yours? And Supriya very gently told them, and she said, it is true that I am the poorest among you, but there is my strength, my treasure, and my affluence, because I will find them each, I will find all this at each one of your doors. We live, friends, in very violent times, difficult times, times in which the community and collective memories are dying. Times in which our many dreams are turning into never-ending nightmares and the future increasingly fragmenting. Times that are collapsing the many life visions into a single cosmology that has created its own universal truths of equality, development, peace. Truths that are inherently discriminatory, even violent. Times that have created a development model that has dispossessed the majority, that has desacralized nature, that has destroyed whole cultures and civilizations, that denigrates the women. Times in which globalization, a la Pax Americana, brings with it a time of violent uncertainty and of brutal wars. Times in which the dominant political thinking and political institutions and instruments of human rights are hardly able to address the violence that is not only escalating, but intensifying. Times in which progress presupposes the genocide of the many. times in which human rights have come to mean the rights of the powerful and the rights of the privileged, times in which the political space for the other is slowly diminishing, even closing. The world, it would seem, is at the end of its imagination. So I want to gather some stars. I want to make a fire here. So I go to the night sky and I bring this. And I want to tell you a story, because the story is of horror, but it is also of hope. It is a story so real, yet magical. It's about Argentina under the dictators. The hero, I usually tell stories of women and grandmothers and shamans and wise women. But this is a wise man. He's a hero, Carlos Rueda, who is an intense man. And he directs a children's theater and is at home in the world of children and theater. And during the time of the dictators, Carlos discovers that he has an extraordinary gift. He realizes that he can be the site, the locus, the vessel, if you like, for a dream. And he can narrate the fate of the missing, you know, Argentina, during the time of the dictators. So from all over Argentina, men and women came to see him. And sitting in the garden, Carlos told them stories. He told them stories of torture, of hope, of death, of luck, stories about the missing. All around the house were birds, tropical in hope, each a memory of a lost friend. One day, the regime arrests his wife, Celia, for a courageous act of reporting. She's writing in the newspapers. The whole world of Carlos collapses, and he realizes that he must keep her alive in his imagination, because Carlos realizes that it is only in the imagination, and it's only the imagination, that stands between us and fear. Fear makes us behave like sheep when we should all be dreaming like poets. As the regime becomes more violent, it is the women who object. It is the women as wives, as mothers, as daughters who congregate in silence, and you all know the story, in the Plaza de Mayo. Quietly, silently, each carries a placard announcing and asking about the missing. This is the power of the powerless. The women walk quietly, sometimes holding hands. But this is not just an act of protest, friends. It is a whole drama of caring, each listening to the other's story, each assuring the other through touch, weaving a sense of community. People realize that we cannot be indifferent observers or spectators or bystanders or even experts. The indifference of the watchers to the spectacles of the regime will not do. One must be a witness, and a witness is not a mere spectator. She looks, but she also listens, and she remembers, because everything must be remembered. Everything must be recited. Nothing must be forgotten. Every scream must be redeemed with a name. We must retrieve history by memory, from memory. And we must explore this new imaginary then, not as experts, but as witnesses. We live, it is true, in a world that is being uprooted, every day uprooted. And I often think that it is not knowledge of this that is lacking. The educated general public, people all over, in this day of all the kinds of technologies that we have in communication, people have always known what outrages have been committed in the name of development, or in the name of progress, in the name of civilization, in the name of democracy, in the name of the market, and now today in the name of human rights and justice and freedom and enduring freedom. Everywhere in the world where knowledge is being suppressed, knowledge that if it were made known would shatter our image of the world and force us to question ourselves, everywhere there the heart of darkness is being enacted. We need then, friends, to find new imaginaries. We need an imaginary where people of the margins are subjects of their own history, writing their own cultural narratives, offering new universals, imagining a world in more life-enhancing terms, constructing a new radical imaginary. The new imaginary cannot have its moorings in the dominant discourse, but must seek to locate itself in a discourse of dissent that comes from a deep critique of the different forms of domination and violence in our times. Any new imaginary cannot be tied to the dominant discourse and systems of violence and exclusion. Our imaginaries must be different. This new cosmology will move away from the Eurocentric and androcentric methodologies which only observe and describe, methodologies which only quantify, percentify, classify, completely indifferent to phenomena which cannot be obtained or explained through its frames. We need to deconstruct the dominant mythology, disallowing the invasion of the dominant discourse, refusing the integration of the South, and I explain how I see the South, into the agenda of globalization. The new imaginary invites us to create a new spectrum of methods which depart from the linear mode of thought and perception to one that is more holistic, one that is more holographic. It urges us to seek more qualitative methodologies in oral history, in experiential analysis, in action research, in fluid categories, you know, listening for those nuances, listening and searching for the shadow in poetry, in myth, in metaphor, even in magic. The new imaginary invites us to a way of knowing that refuses to control nature. It is a way, and to exploit nature, to place these fragments, to discern an essence, to move into another space, another time, recapturing hidden knowledges, regenerating forgotten spaces, and refinding other cosmologies. I think many women that have spoken during this meeting are talking about the reconnecting and the refinding of other cosmologies, reweaving here the future. It is perhaps here that the notion of the sacred survives. It is here in the cosmologies and the rootedness of cultures, here with people on the peripheries, perhaps, that we must begin to speak and we may see the beginnings of an alternative discourse. Our imaginaries must be different. We need to imagine alternative visions for change, to craft visions that will evolve out of the conversations across cultures, conversations that are not mediated by the hegemony of the universal discourse. The new imaginary invites us to another, and I just picked the human rights discourse. I could pick war or patriarchy. Let me take human rights. But one that will not be trapped either in the universalisms of the dominant discourse, tied as it is to a market economy, a monoculturalism, a materialist ethic, the politics and the polity of nation states. But neither must it be caught in the culture specific, but one that will proffer universalisms that have been born out of a dialogue of civilizations. But this will mean even another ethic of dialogue. We need to find new perspectives on the universality of human rights in dialogue with other cultural perspectives of reality, other notions of development, of democracy, even dissent, other concepts of power and governance, other notions of equality, dignity, for instance, other concepts of justice, justice without revenge, a justice with a healing, because humankind proffers us many horizons of discourse. And just because our eyes do not as yet behold these horizons, it does not mean that these horizons do not exist. As the poet says, friends, we must now break that routine. But if I would just look at democracy, because democracy came up too many times, and the dominant understanding of this democracy is tied to a notion of individual rights, private property, the market economy. We are all equal, we are told, in political democracy. But this political democracy is tied to a market economy, And the market works as the guarantor of inequality, of unequal distribution, of how only a few will be rich and how the many must live below poverty lines. What shall we do with this rhetoric of political equality on which this democracy is built while the majority live without, below the poverty lines, as I said? We must seek new concepts of democracy, but democracy then tied to notions of freedom that is different from that which is enshrined in the Enlightenment and its market. There is an urgent need to reinvent the political, to infuse the political with the ethical. And we've been talking about an ethic of care, an ethic of concern, an ethic of connectedness, an ethic of compassion, an ethic of community. I think of 1996, just to underline this point, of Madeleine Albright, which was then the Secretary of State. And somebody asked her what she felt about the 500,000 Iraqi children who had died as a result of the U.S. economic sanctions. Was it a high price to pay, she was asked. She replied that it was a very hard choice, but yes, that's her quote, yes, all things considered, we think that the price was worth it. Lives of children lost in wars are considered collateral damage. In the world of rights, we are all equal. Each of us have a fundamental right to life. If I had time, I would have told you a little story now, but let me continue. Because we must break this routine, we must do even extravagant actions. Jen, an action like this, we have to continue. Extravagant actions that will begin the decolonization of our imagination, that would change the course of history, that would change the logic of our development. What is essential is to go beyond the politics of violence and terror of the times and to find a new imagination, to sing our root song, to refind the dream. The fire still burns, and I'm going to tell you another little story. So it's a story of women, and I want to weave that in, so it's some of my work also, which I offer you. It's not really my work, it's the work of many, many women that are involved in what we call the courts of women. It's a story of women located in the discourse of dissent, inspired by an imaginary offered by the new meaning of the South, which I'll come to. A little expression proffered in this new imaginary that we explore, not as expert, not as witness, not as a spectator, because a witness is not a spectator. She looks and she also listens. She remembers so that nothing must be forgotten. The story of the courts of women is a dream of many years ago. It started with the women in the Asian Women's Human Rights Council and with several other women's groups and movements in different places, in Asia and the Pacific first, where we've held so far 9 courts. And we've encouraged more courts, worked with women in different regions in the world, mostly in the third world, in Africa, in the Arab region, in the Arab world, and in Central America. We've held, as I said, about 20 courts so far. The courts of women, and that's what I really want to talk about, is the unfolding of this space. So many of the kinds of dreams that we have been talking about, we started the first court in 1992. It is the unfolding of a space, an imaginary, a horizon, that invites us in many ways to think, to feel, to dance and to dream, to challenge and to connect. It's an attempt to define a new space for women and to infuse this space with a new vision, a new politics. It is a gathering of voices and visions of the global South, locating itself in a discourse of dissent. In itself, it is a dislocating practice, challenging the new world order of globalization, crossing lines, breaking new ground, listening to the voices and movements in the margins. The courts of women, because it challenges the dominant knowledge paradigm, weaves together the objective, it is not one or the other, so it weaves together the objective reality through analysis of the issues with the subjective testimonies of the women, the rational with the intuitive, the personal with the political, the lyrical with the logical, the dancer with the dance, because you cannot separate the dancer from the dance. and urging us, inviting us to discern new insights, offering us other ways to know, inviting us to seek deeper layers of knowledge towards creating a new knowledge paradigm. The courts of women are public hearings, friends. The court is used in a very symbolic way. But then, you know, when you start to say the court of women, that's when it gets cheeky, okay? The court is used in a symbolic way. In the courts, the voices of the survivors are listened to, women bringing their personal testimonies of violence to the courts. The courts are sacred spaces where women speaking in the language of suffering, and this is very important, name the crimes, seeking redress, even reparation. The courts of women in this way is a rejection of the silencing of the violence. Silence, as we know, is the condition by which power maintains its ideological hold. Breaking the silence represents that point of disruption and of counter-hegemonic truth-telling. The courts of women are about truth-telling. In place of silence, the women speak truth to power, not compromise truth with power, but the women speak truth to power. In place of darkness, the women provide knowledge of violence and violations. I have to change that word. While the courts of women, friends, listen to the voices of the survivors, it also listens to the voices of women who resist, who rebel, who refuse to turn against their dreams. I'm going to jump a little. It speaks to a new generation of human rights, because the court of women also hears challenges to the dominant human rights discourse, whose frames have excluded the knowledges of women. They hear the courts repeatedly the need to extend the discourse and to challenge the basic premises on which the discourse is built, the ideological, the philosophical, and the historical moorings of the rights discourse, challenging it to include the meanings and symbols and perspectives and visions of women. It speaks then for a new generation of women's human rights. The courts of women legitimizes not only by dominant standards, but by claims to the truth. That is what legitimizes. Witnessing women reclaiming of voice and language, and it is the rejection that constitutes a contemporary resistance to the decolonization of our minds and of our imaginations. Our imaginations have been colonized, as we know, by the logic of the market, of profit-making, of self-interest. I heard that from you also when you spoke, of competition, of private property, and these times of globalization that further colonize our imagination. The courts of women invite us to write a counter-hegemonic history, a history from the margins, because it is a journey of the margins, a journey rather than an imagined destination. A journey in which the dailiness of life, and that's important, proffers possibilities for our imaginary, survival and sustenance, for connectedness and community. For the idea of an imaginary is inextricably linked to the personal, political, and historical. It is the dislocation expressed by particular social groups that makes possible the articulation of new imaginaries. These social groups on the margins, the global South, the South in the South, the South in the North, the indigenous, the blacks, the women, are beginning to articulate these new imaginaries. I must just go for a little while to say to you how we understand the South in the courts of women. The South, as we often express ourselves as third world, but also as the third world is so much of an economic category, you know, the notion of catching up, the notion of progress. But the South is the cultures and civilizations of Asia, of Africa, of the Arab world, of Latin America. The South is the voices and movements of peoples, wherever these movements exist. The South is the visions and wisdoms of women. The South is the discovering of new paradigms which challenge the existing theoretical concepts and categories, breaking the mind constructs, seeking a new language to describe what it perceives, refusing the one objective, rational, scientific discourse and cosmology and worldview as the only worldview. The South is the discovery of other cosmologies, as the recovery of other knowledges that have been hidden, submerged, even silenced. The South then, as Michel Foucault spoke of, as the insurrection of these subjugated knowledges. The South is history, friends, but the South also is mystery. The South is the finding of new political paradigms, inventing new political patterns, creating alternative political imaginations. The South is the revelation of each civilization within its own idiom, and the South is conversations between the different cultures and civilizations. The South then as new universalisms. And I believe that in our searching for new universalisms of the South, it promises to bring to the world new meanings and also new moorings. It invites us to create a new imaginary, to birth a new cosmology. The South then as new political imaginary. The peasants in Chiapas, all of us know of the peasants in Chiapas, describing their new imaginary, explain their core vision in their struggle for their livelihoods and for their life worlds and for retaining those life worlds. And in their profound and careful organization, in their political imagining and vision, they do not offer a clear, rigid, universal truth, knowing that the journey in itself is precious. They sum up their vision in these three little words, asking, we walk. The asking in itself challenges master narratives, master's houses, houses of reason. Karina spoke about the master imaginary gift. Jen told us about the gift imaginary. But it's this asking in itself that challenges the universal truths of power and of politics. The courts of women invite us to dismantle the master's house. Audre Lorde said this. I think I'm the third one who speaks of her poems. But Audre Lorde said that the master's tools can never dismantle the master's house. There is an urgent need to challenge the centralizing logic of the master's narrative, implicit to the dominant discourses of war, of patriarchy, of race, of the project for the new American century. This dominant logic is a logic of violence and exclusion. It is a logic of superior and inferior, a logic of civilized and uncivilized. I'm going to finish quickly now. You know, the part that I wanted really to share with you is the part, the Court of Women on the U.S. war crimes. But I must leave that out because it will take me at least 10 or 15 minutes on that. So I'll just end this part of it, and then I'm sure everybody wants to ask you questions. The centralizing logic, friends, must be decentered. It must be interrupted, even disrupted. The courts of women speak to this disruption. It speaks to this trespass. Fatima Mernissi wrote a very beautiful book called The Dreams of Trespass, and that's what the courts of women are about. It is about crossing lines, and it is about listening to the wisdoms of the forest. The courts of women is a tribute to the human spirit in which testimonies cannot only be heard but also legitimized. The courts provide the witnesses and survivors not only validating their suffering, but also validating their hopes and dreams that they have dared to harbor. It speaks to the right of subjugated peoples to articulate the crimes against women, bringing new beginnings in political possibilities. It is a taking away. It is taking away the legitimizing ideologies of domination and returning it into the hands of women. The courts of women are challenges to this, to the imaginary, inviting us to a fuller unfolding of our imaginaries, a radically new way of looking at ourselves and others, a basic change of an ethical nature crucial for us to rediscover and to regain our humanity, knowing that another world must be possible, another worldview, as Jen says, is possible, and that the violence against women must become unthinkable. We need to find new spaces for our imagination, gathering the subjugated knowledges, seeking ancient wisdoms, but also infusing this with new visions, listening to the many voices from the margins speaking, but listening also to the many unspoken, remembering our roots, knowing our wisdoms, wisdoms that are written on the barks of trees, wisdoms that are written on our skins and the inside of our skins, searching for that river beneath the river. For a few moments, think that I'm Jen, okay? I'm going to speak for her because I found this very beautiful little poem of Chrysostas, and I think it's something that I want to say, but that's from Jen. And Jen, to all the others who work with Jen, to the really the beautiful women that work with Jen, Sally and Liliana and Mary Nell and Bracken, I hope I don't forget anybody here, and Chiki and Jesse, as I want to say this to each one, and to Labar and to Toby and to Sylvia, to all of you. If I've forgotten somebody, you're there in my heart. But I want to say this, and now I'm Jen, okay? And she's saying this to all of us. She says to all of us here, you have come gathering with me. You have made a circle with me. Each of you from the places that I have wandered, I want to give you the first flower opening from the earth that I have sown. I want to give each of you that flower. I give you seeds for a new way. I give you the moon shining on a fire of singing women. I give you the sounds of our thoughts flying. I give you the sounds of our feet dancing. I give you the sounds of peace. Thank you for all the patience you have had to listen.